Williamson. Again, whenever you're ready. You have, just wanted to confirm, you have 5 minutes of vote, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Go ahead.
May it please the court, Brett Williamson of O'Melveny Myers LLP, on behalf of the plaintiffs and appellants, Central Admixture Pharmacy Services, Inc., and Dr. Gerald Buckford. The parties are here for a second time on this case because the district court ignored this court's mandate the first time around. In your prior decision on appeal, you explicitly and unequivocally directed the district court on remand to conduct a, quote, redetermination of infringement under the patent's original uncorrected claims, unquote. And that's only one of three separate express statements in the opinion to that effect. But the district court did not make such a determination, but instead dismissed the case based solely on its erroneous conclusion that CAPS, which I'll refer to as the plaintiff's
opinion. Footnote 7 in our opinion, which is appended to the second reference, where we said on remand, the infringement inquiry should proceed on the original popularity version of the claim. In footnote 7, you have a text with it here, right?
I do.
It's a 23 attached to your appendix, to your brief.
Yes, footnote 7?
Yeah, footnote 7. The issues there that they're talking about, the things that they, our court did not address the first time around, don't those go to the question of infringement?
They do go to the question of infringement, and they are left for the district court to consider. The issue...
I mean, I was thinking you would have argued not only did we in three places in our opinion say, when it goes back, let's try the
pre-amendment
claims, but here are issues that relate to that.
I would agree with the court. I mean, it's expressly stated three different occasions that it's supposed to be a determination of infringement.
We didn't intend to have the issue relitigated in footnote of the surplus.
I would agree. The appellees here don't dispute the nature of this court's mandate. They simply try to turn the district court's dismissal order into an interpretation of the mandate.
Well, that isn't completely fair. They think that there was nothing in the mandate that required a determination on the merits of the infringement claim. Right? And they couldn't be asking for sanctions against you unless they took that position.
Well, if they are taking that position, then I would submit that it's untenable because it's a complete misreading of the express statement.
That's what the appeal is all about.
We would contend, Your Honor, that certainly if that is what the appellees contend, then the opposition is not submitted in good faith. I mean, the mandate is expressed. So crediting some...
Well, the mandate did not direct the district court to amend the plea, did it?
No, it did not. That's correct.
Right. And so your adversary is saying, well, unless the mandate had actually told the district court that it had to amend the pleadings to bring back into play the pre-COC infringement issue, then there's nothing in our opinion that just works.
In
their perspective, redetermined meant that you have to come back and greet, you have to say to somebody, well, what issues are left for play to allow you the opportunity to say you think you're entitled to a trial, and then the trial judge can say no, no, no.
And we would say that that's simply not the law. The law has never required this court or any appellate court to specify with that sort of detail what the district court is supposed to do on remand. Here it was more explicit than many mandates. And we would argue that is really the only issue that this court needs to address, that under clear authority breaks in other cases, there was no discretion in the district court.
I thought it was pretty clear.
Your Honor, you would know you were one of the members of the prior panel, so CAP submits, and I'll
read it. Also, I've authored the opinion, so I think I know what was in there. It's the specific language instructing the district court what to do.
Well, you know, based upon that, it is clearly the position that CAPS would have. I would submit on that argument, and I will leave the rest of my time.
I know that you didn't argue in response to the actual motion for sanctions, and you didn't argue that the motion itself was frivolous, right? You simply moved to strike it on a procedural ground?
Actually, the response by CAPS was, in the first instance, a motion to strike. And we did present a very brief argument, simply pointing out that this court's decision in Biodex and other decisions would hold that there just needs to be an arguable basis for an appeal, for it to be made in good faith. We don't think
but you yourself are not pressing sanctions against your adversary for having filed a frivolous motion seeking sanctions.
We are not. We felt that enough was enough.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you. Lewis. We'll hear from the other side. Mr. Beal? Bill, let me ask you, you have these three provisions in our original opinion. I realize you have a different view of the original opinion, but, I mean, how can you really say that this appeal is frivolous? I mean, you heard the discussion, and
yes, sir.
And you see the provisions.
Yes, sir.
I'm leaving aside the merits of who ultimately may prevail here. I have difficulty seeing how anyone could say that this appeal is a frivolous appeal.
Your Honor, I mean, why did you advance that? Because we honestly believed, Your Honor.
But in the face of these, what was just read?
Yes, Your Honor.
On what basis do you think it's frivolous in view of that language? You heard what Judge Garza said.
Yes, Your Honor, I did hear what Judge Garza just said, and I respect what Judge Garza just said. When we filed our claim for frivolous sanctions against him, we honestly believe that the district court had complied with the mandate. Still do. I don't mean to disparage what you say, Your Honor, at all. But what the district court did was say, gentlemen, you're back in the court. Tell us what the issues are. We briefed the issues that we thought were present. They briefed the issues they thought were present. The judge looked at it and said, little.
But their argument is based on what we said in our appeal, the mandate.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's hard for me to see how one can look at this language, the three places in our opinion, and say that the appeal is frivolous. You can say they're wrong, but to say it's a frivolous appeal.
Well, Your Honor, we said.
Well, if you look at page 5 of the motion, you'll see that all of the ground would say the reason why Cash's appeal is frivolous is because it cited no case law, statute, or provision that allows the party to automatically revive a claim that purposes is true. Right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
That's the whole premise of your argument that it's frivolous.
And at that point, Your Honor, we were of the opinion that the court, this court, had said to the district court, you may not use osmolality, the corrected claims, in deciding this case. You must go back and decide this case based on the osmolarity claims. And we're of the opinion that the district court looked at the prior proceedings, determined that there was no literal infringement. We submitted to the district court that because there was no literal infringement, and because the question of the doctrine of equivalence had been before the district court prior to the pretrial order and withdrawn by the plaintiffs, that they had waived that order.
All of which we knew, right? In the case we got here before.
We argued.
When the case was up here before, we had the record from the proceeding below.
Yes, you did, Your Honor.
And we knew that there had been a desire to go see if you can amend the claims, and we knew that if that was successful and the district court said it was successful, then we knew the CAPS was going to throw away its pre-amendment DOE argument. Yes. The reason for going for the amendment was because the claim didn't read on the accused stuff, right?
Yes,
before
sir.
The amendment. It was close, but it didn't mean it lived.
Correct.
And so anybody who was capable of reading a record when the case came up here would have known that the only pre-COC issue left on the first would be a DOE claim.
Correct, Your Honor. And it's our premise that when they were at the district court, they had the opportunity then to litigate that claim, and they said, no, we don't want to.
No question about it. They don't deny that they took it off the table. They say, we took it off the table. Whether they took it off the table for some strategic or some, you know, reason that you believe they did, so what? They're saying, lucky us, the Federal Circuit put it back on the table.
We did not understand the Federal Circuit.
I know you didn't, but that's the question.
Well, we understood.
And to say that the brief of the appeal was frivolous because the only rule they cited was the mandate rule, and the mandate rule works, right? If an appellate court says to a trial court, when this case goes back, we're going to try a particular issue, then it doesn't make any difference if that issue has been taken out of the case earlier, does it? Doesn't the mandate override the district court's discretion?
It certainly would.
If the mandate is clear.
If the mandate is clear, you're certainly right, Your Honor. We said, in our minds, redetermine, admit the district court.
I'm just trying to get it clear. So you're now saying that the reason why the appeal is frivolous is because you disagree with Capps as to whether or not the mandate was clear.
Our interpretation of the mandate and the court's interpretation of the mandate was that the court was free to redetermine.
I can tell you, the district court's interpretation of the mandate ain't worth much.
Absolutely right, Your Honor.
It, to our
it is your mandate and it's
so
obvious.
Hang your hat on something that ain't worth much strikes me as a little risky.
That is a little risky, Your Honor. The second issue that we had was the doctrine of equivalence issue itself. As to whether the
doctrine. Would you like to withdraw your motion for sanctions and we'll proceed with the argument?
Sure, we'll withdraw the motion for sanctions.
Okay, let's go on.
Thanks,
Mr. I would hope that when the argument is over, there are a couple more arguments. Some of the marshals can direct you to where our clerk's office is. You go to the clerk's office and enter the withdrawal.
Certainly.
So that by the time I get back to my chambers, I know it's withdrawn.
Will do, Your Honor.
Because I know how to draft a show of cause order and I'm very fast.
Understand, Your Honor.
You make it to the clerk's office before I get back to my chambers.
I will certainly try, Your Honor. We certainly presented this in good faith. We did not.
I won't be back here until 2 o'clock.
I'll be down there as soon as
But do time. Withdraw that because I think that'll be your best course, Mr. Bill.
Thank you. I will do so. Again, it is on that issue, I fully understand that the court. From what you said to me now, doesn't give much credence to the fact that the pretrial order did not include this claim and that it was withdrawn.
I agree with you that with the statement in your motion to say that our opinion did not order the district court to revise its pretrial order. But it did seem to me that footnote 7 in our opinion would be utter surplusage if the question was whether if the trial judge had the discretion to decide whether to try the case or not.
Well, Your Honor, I did take that footnote with the words redetermined to mean that the trial judge should go back and look at the record and determine what should be done with this case regarding infringement of Elnon and the claim of osmolarity. And that's what we believe that she did. She went, she looked, she found no reason to say that what the plaintiffs withdrew should be reinstated. She took that as a matter of her discretion as to whether to amend her claim, her pretrial order or not. And so she determined with that claim, with osmolarity in it, that there was nothing left in this case.
She determined to dispose of the infringement issue on procedural grounds as opposed to on merits.
That's correct, Your Honor. And we had,
I don't disagree with your right to debate what the scope of mandate was. As you can gather from my earlier questions, I do debate the wisdom of the decision to seek sanctions in light of the debate simply being what did the mandate mean.
Well, Your Honor, granted, page 5 of the brief pointed that out. We also feel that there is no way, and obviously I can be wrong. I've been doing this case for 10 years, and the district court told me I was wrong many times in the past. When you get to the doctrine of equivalence at all in this case, there was an amendment in the prosecution of this case in which the patentee said, I have to amend my case to overcome prior art that is cited against me. This prior art says that osmolarities of this range are well known by Dr. Buckford and his colleagues. They're taught in references. And the patentee said, in order to overcome these references, I amend my claim by saying that the osmolarity range must be at an increased level relative to...
Well, you may or may not be right on the FESCO issue, but that's not for us to decide. We've been to record.
A big pardon?
You're basically arguing that the DOE claim, maybe you want to argue it's frivolous, but you're arguing that the DOE claim doesn't have any merit because they amended their claim to get over prior and they surrendered everything in between.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's what you're saying.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, that, you know, I think it's pretty clear that there are a lot of factual determinations that need to be, you know, weighed in nature.
Your Honor, with all due respect, we have argued that to the district court many times, and we've argued it here, and this is a very simple amendment. It says the osmolarity is to be at an increased level. And it's in direct response to a rejection by the examiners on prior art, and they have not put forth any rebuttal under the FESCO requirements at any time that we've argued this as to why. This doesn't apply. They have said that it's, they have not said that it's tangential. They have not said that it's not in direct response to the arguments.
You have a Rule 11 motion pending in the district court against your adversary on this issue?
No, Your Honor.
No, you do that if you want.
I don't think I'll do that, Your Honor.
You certainly like to get the gun out of the holster quick.
We
shot yourself in the foot in this court. I hope you don't do that below.
I certainly will not do that below, Your Honor. But we thought it was a matter of law, given the clarity of the amendment that was made, that under FESCO, as interpreted by this court, they had not come back with any of the factual information that you're talking about that would entitle them to say it's a matter of law.
You said go back and do it, and that has to be done now. So this is really, this is an argument you can make before the district court after all the evidence is coming. And the only issue before us is did the court err in not allowing the case to go forward, and we've pretty much, I think you can see, feel it did. So the thing now is to let things go in the district court, and I would take Judge Clevenger's advice to heart.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'll wait your opinion.
Thank you.
Your Honor, we'll waive our rebuttal.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Goodman, you'll head down to the clerk's office.
Yes, sir.
Okay.